Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2026. We begin with state news. $56 billion budget caps session. New businesses, taxes, less spending in plan. By Ben Zielinski with the Capital News, Illinois. Illinois lawmakers approved the state budget early Monday morning after slogging through the night, enacting new taxes on business and authorizing less spending than Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed in February. "It's allowed us to be prepared for the great reality we face today," Senate Democrats budget leader L.G. Sims of Chicago said during the debate. "The reality of federal cuts, the reality of chaos coming from Washington. We are not placing blame. We are prepared. We are not acting on fear. We are acting responsibly," close quote. The budget totals $55.9 billion, supported by a similar amount of revenue. The spending plan included an $830 million supplemental current year spending plan, meaning the upcoming fiscal year 2027 budget is essentially flat. To get it across the finish line, Democrats, especially progressives, had to temper their expectations. Many had called for new progressive revenue measures throughout the session, including taxes on big corporations and billionaires, and for Illinois to untie itself from parts of the federal tax code. Instead, the measure freezes corporate net operating loss and taxes social media companies, digital assets, fantasy sports, tobacco, and sports betting on prediction market websites. Democrats also sought to include at least a few measures that address affordability. It freezes the 1.3 cent gas tax increase that's slated for July 1st, pushing it to January. It also creates a sales tax holiday on school supplies from August 7th to the 16th. Republicans, meanwhile, said the relief didn't go nearly far enough. "We're not going to raise the gas tax in July. We're just going to wait a couple more months so we can raise it at the end of the year, after election time," Representative Joe Sosnowski, a Republican from Rockford, said, adding sarcastically that there was, quote, "a lot of courage coming out of that side of the aisle and the governor." Its passage comes after a spring session thrust further into unpredictability by the war in Iran and federal policy changes. Budget analysts for the General Assembly and the governor's office tempered revenue expectations just weeks ago, citing growing pessimism over the economy. The 3,700-page spending plan and associated implementation bill were introduced late Saturday evening, and about 200 additional pages were added around 2 a.m. on Monday. But other components of the budget, including the capital and revenue bills, were not filed until mid-afternoon on Saturday. 13 million people expect us to do our job in the openness of daylight within the months and weeks leading up to a May 31st deadline each year, not in the final few hours of darkness," Senator Chris Balkema, a Republican from Shanahan, said as the Senate took up the spending bill around 2:30 a.m. "It's highly embarrassing to the 13 million people." No Republicans voted for the plan, though some House lawmakers said they were at least more involved in budget negotiations than in recent years. "It's been very recent communication, but it's certainly better than no communication at all, which has been, of course, the status quo for many years," said Representative Ryan Spain, a Republican from Peoria. The spending measure, House Bill 111, passed the Senate 37-21 after 3 a.m. Monday morning. The House followed around 4:15 a.m. with a 76-39 vote, followed by the Budget Implementation Bill, House Bill 2949. The Revenue and Tax Changes, Senate Bill 3019, passed the House around 11:15 p.m. on a 73-41 vote, followed by the Senate around 12:30 a.m. with only Democratic votes as well. The budget also calls for transferring $150 million in sales tax revenue from gas to the General Review Fund, Revenue Fund, once public transportation is fully funded, opening that revenue up to be spent on any purpose. If you're a driver who is irritated by the high price of gas that you're paying, you should be extra irritated by where the funds are going, Spain said. Senator Chapin Rose, a Republican from Mahomet, aired similar concerns Monday, earlier on Sunday during committee. We ought to be suspending the sales tax on motor fuel right now, not diverting it to the General Revenue Fund, and not diverting it, oddly, to the exact same dollar amount that we got for illegal immigrants and welcoming centers, he said. The state plans to spend $143 million on a health care program for undocumented immigrant seniors and another $4 million on welcoming centers that provide services to immigrants arriving in Illinois. Lawmakers incorporated a pair of the tax changes that Pritzker had proposed in February. One will lower the cap on corporate net operating loss deductions for business. Another will impose a tax on social media companies based on the number of users the platform has in Illinois. Combined, those are expected to generate $500 million in new revenue. Social media companies will be taxed on a progressive scale, starting with platforms with 100,000 to 499,999 users, paying 10% per month for each user, all the way up to platforms with at least 1 million users, paying a $165,000 fee, plus 50 cents for each user each month. A similar tax in Chicago is already tied up in court. New taxes on digital asset sales and fantasy sports are expected to generate $65 million. The state will create a licensing structure for fantasy sports operators and impose a 15% tax on each business, something Representative Curtis Tarver, a Democrat from Chicago, said the industry themselves requested. Consumers purchasing tires will also see a 50-cent increase in a tax on those purchases, which primarily funds a waste disposal fund. Sports bets on prediction markets and remote tobacco retailers will also be taxed under the plan. The state is addicted to spending money it doesn't have, Representative Blaine Wilhauer, a Republican from Beecher City, said. It's addicted to creating programs it can't afford. It's addicted to making promises it can't keep, and it's addicted to coming back to the taxpayers constantly to clean up their mess. The revenue package also creates a targeted advertising services tax, which is more commonly known as a digital ad tax. However, lawmakers expect the tax will also face legal challenges and are not planning to gather revenue from it in fiscal year 27. Tarver said the goal was to create a framework to implement the tax later if it's held up in court. Keith Statz, president of the Illinois Taxpayers Federation, told a House committee the tax lightly violates federal internet freedom laws. The budget package does not eliminate tax incentives for data centers, despite Pritzker calling for it in his budget. Other spending in the budget appears to rely on numerous fund sweeps that redirect money from one program to another or to the state's general revenue fund. One of those sweeps includes transferring $70 million from the Bridge program, created last year to allow Pritzker to allocate funding to programs that fall short in funding because of federal cuts, to fund for Illinois' future for infrastructure projects and other grants. Money in that fund is typically earmarked for specific projects in Democratic legislative districts. However, the spending bill stipulates that $70 million from the Bridge Fund should go to a new program to fill gaps in food assistance programs, which led to some confusion among lawmakers debating the bill in the House. Representative Robin Gabel, a Democrat from Evanston, said the budget includes about $65 million in reductions for government operations, a relatively small cut in the budget. She said no government staff would be laid off. Most important in this moment, this budget is not balanced on the backs of working families, Gabel said. That means no taxes on working people and no severe cuts to critical services they depend on. The budget establishes a program to help people who have lost Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits as the federal government institutes new restrictions on eligibility. Under the new Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger Act, or FRESH program, people who have lost or seen their SNAP benefits reduced will be eligible for a one-time $400 payment. The program is scheduled to last just 1 year and is estimated to cost about $70 million. Following Wilhauer's address, Representative Diane Blair Sherlock, a Democrat from Villa Park, pointed a finger at the federal government. I will not be lectured about excessive state spending at a time when I am watching billion-dollar ballrooms being built, private jets being flown around by staff to go to their girlfriends' concerts, while SNAP benefits are cut, while Medicaid is cut, while Medicare is cut, while people are desperately trying to get health care, she said. We as a state are trying to fill in gaps created by the federal government. Funding for local governments will increase. Lawmakers allowed the percentage of the income of tax that they received to stay flat at 6.47%. Because of natural income tax growth, their total dollar amount received will grow. Pritzker had proposed reducing the percentage. Mayors vigorously lobbied lawmakers this spring not to cut the percentage, and Sims told reporters on Sunday morning that senators had agreed. Illinois lawmakers are also in line for a roughly 3% pay raise, which will bring their base salaries to $101,450. State law indexes their pay each year to the rate of inflation. The bill also fully funds pensions and the state's evidence-based funding model for K-12 education, including a property tax relief component. However, districts receiving those grants will need to forego property tax increases for 3 years rather than two, as the current law requires. Higher education will only receive a 1% increase next year. The second year in a row, new funding was below the rate of inflation. Direct service providers will receive a 60-cent wage increase, half of what is recommended. The budget also does not include any increase in the rainy day fund. Olivia Jacobs brings us Hideout Hopes Food Stands Out. Restaurant promises local, unusual brats, paninis, and more. Noah Nelson has opened the local Hideout Bar and Grill in an out-of-the-way Bloomington location, but he says he hopes his unusual, locally sourced offerings and small-town vibe make it stand out. I think it's a cool spot. Like, inside, you'd never expect what it looks like inside from the outside. We sure didn't, he said. Nelson, the former owner of Route 66 Roadhouse and Pizzas by Marcelloni in Pontiac, opened the restaurant May 18th with his girlfriend Jasmine Wickman at the former site of Crave Hot Dogs and Barbecue Restaurant and a nail salon. At 2401 East Oakland Avenue, it's next to a Shell gas station and across from a Chase Bank, but the couple wants customers to know they are far from serving gas station food. Offerings include loaded brats that are locally sourced from Bloomington Meats, and they came up with special desserts people don't really see anywhere, and they offer paninis, which aren't found in many places, Nelson added. I wanted to change it up because it's a bigger market down here, so trying to bring something new down here that we don't have, Nelson explained. The Hideout's name came from the fact the restaurant is sort of hidden next to the gas station and was something that popped into Nelson's head. What makes the Hideout unique is the different food they offer and the small town vibes in a bigger city you don't necessarily have at other places, Nelson said. Popular menu items include the Midwest Street Brat, made with beer bratwurst and loaded sweet peppers, onions, and sauerkraut. The Mac Attack Brat, made with cheddar bratwurst and loaded with white cheddar mac and cheese and smoky bacon bits. The paninis and flatbreads are also on the rise with customers. Wickman said their other popular item is the golden sweet potato tots served with a side of marshmallow fluff for dipping, and it can also be upgraded to loaded. Fried green beans, a skillet cookie, and banana split nachos are popular as well. Everything, as far as I know, we've had nothing but great reviews, Nelson said, of what customers have enjoyed of the business so far. Current hours are 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and the restaurant is closed on Sunday. Hours will be lengthened once they receive approval for their liquor license, which they are hoping for by the end of June, Nelson said. The restaurant has a beer wall where the goal is to have half of the wall serve local beers on tap, with wine and cocktails on the other half. Nelson & Wickman's favorite menu item is the buffalo chicken panini, which is made with crispy chicken tossed in bold buffalo sauce and layered with melted cheese and grilled on a toasted panini bread. It's served hot with a ranch drizzle. I want to do kind of like I did in Pontiac. We tried to do all of the meals local, and that's why I wanted to try to do that down here, to where we use the brats local, and we're hoping to hopefully work with them, Bloomington Meats, and get one of our own brats made. That's the hope, he said. Nelson said the only brat place he knows of is in Wisconsin, and they only offer beer brats. The only other places he knows are in the United Kingdom. The Hideout offers indoor dining, carryout, and online ordering and delivery through DoorDash and Grubhub. The goal is to grow it enough to where down the road we can move to a bigger location. That's kind of the hope, or add another one. But the hope is just to keep growing and let people know how good the food is, and then, yeah, just to get a bigger spot and kind of take what you can right now. For more information, visit the new spot or search the local Hideout Bar and Grill on Facebook, or you can contact the restaurant at 779-804-6024. Also on the front page for downtown, we have lofty plans set for old State Farm building. Justin Fern, founder and CEO of Urban Equity Properties, said State Farm's former downtown headquarters on East Washington Street first caught his eye for redevelopment in 2017. I was blown away by the beauty and the size of the structure, Fern said. It was a great law of conversion candidate, and I had to have it. However, he was unable to reach an agreement on the sale price. 2 years later, Fern learned the insurance giant was planning to demolish the century-old building, so he took action before that happened. After another 7 years of dealing with COVID-19 fallout, rising inflation, and other factors, Fern officially kicked off the redevelopment of the former State Farm building, which will be known as GJ Lofts, during a ceremony on Monday morning in downtown Bloomington. This project is the largest Illinois residential loft conversion ever outside of Chicago, and it's in Bloomington, he said. The first phase of the plan, which runs through July 2027, will add 57 apartments, ground floor commercial space for a Starbucks, and a restaurant on the top floor of the building. The Park Plaza garage at 112 East Jefferson Street will also be restored next spring to add 91 parking spaces and retail space. Another 126 apartments, a food hall, and additional ground floor retail and restaurant spaces will be added in the second phase, which will run from November 2027 to October 2028. In total, the project is estimated to cost $68 million. Fern thanked a number of other partners who made the project possible, including the Bank of Pontiac, Pace Equity out of Milwaukee, and First Midwest Group. He also thanked U.S. Representatives Darren LaHood and Eric Sorensen for advocating for the project at the federal level. Bloomington Mayor Dan Brady said that over the last year the project faced a number of challenges, but it never stopped city staff from giving up. And from the financial side of things, from our city staff across the board, they just continued to push and make sure that this day was going to be a reality, Brady said. As part of the celebration, Brady sent a load of construction materials to the 13th floor of the building using a hoist. Ward 6 Alderman Cody Hendricks said the building has stood as a symbol of both Bloomington's history and of the company that helped shape the community. And today, instead of becoming a vacant reminder of our past, this building is being transformed into a crucial part of our future, Hendricks said. He added that this project is not happening in isolation, which makes it even more exciting. In combination with the city's streetscape project, Connect Transit's new downtown transit hub and Lifelong Access's new social service hub at the former Pantograph building, Hendricks said there is more than $300 million in development happening in downtown Bloomington. That's remarkable, and it's not something that just happens by accident, Hendricks said. It's because of individuals behind me, and it's because of city staff that work tirelessly behind the scenes, often with no accolades. State Representative Sharon Chong, a Democrat from Bloomington, and a representative from the office of Representative Dave Kohler, a Democrat from Peoria, were also in attendance during Monday's ceremony. Olivia Jacobs tells us Hauser to headline DuQuoin State Fair. Country music artist Randy Hauser will headline the DuQuoin State Fair grandstand on Monday, September 7th. Hauser is known for songs like How Country Feels, Running Out of Moonlight, Boots On, Goodnight Kiss, and We Went. Randy Hauser has one of those voices that instantly grabs your attention, and his live shows bring incredible energy to the stage, said Jerry Costello II, Illinois' Department of Agriculture director, in a news release. We're excited to welcome him to DuQuoin, and know fairgoers are going to love this concert. Hauser has more than 1 billion streams and earned critical acclaim for the top 5 hit and CMA Song of the Year nominee, Like a Cowboy. He has also appeared in movies such as Killers of the Flower Moon and The Hill. He is said to be one of country music's most commanding vocalists, and the New York Times said his voice was wholly different, thicker and more throbbing, a cauldron bubbling over, the news release said. Randy Hauser's catalog is packed with songs fans know and sing along to, and he brings an authentic country sound that fits perfectly at the DuQuoin State Fair, said Luke Davison, fair manager, in the news release. This is going to be a great night of live music at the grandstand. Tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, June 5th via Ticketmaster. They range from $35 to $45. The fair runs from August 28th to September 7th. Other acts that have been announced include co-headliners Ashley Cook and Cameron Marlowe on August 30th, Tyler Hubbard on September 3rd, Night Ranger on September 4th, and Russell Dickerson on September 5th. Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission, writes Veterans Corner. Question. I served in the Army in the Middle East. I heard from my buddies that I may have been exposed to toxins during my service, and I should ask for a toxic substance screening evaluation. How do I know if my service location exposed me to toxic substances? And the answer? According to the Veterans Administration, if you served in any of the following locations on or after August 2, 1990, you have a VA presumption of exposure to burn pits or other toxins. Bahrain, Iran, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, United Arab Emirates, or the airspace above any of these locations. If you served in any of these locations on or after September 11, 2001, you have a VA presumption of exposure to burn pits or other toxins. Afghanistan, Djibouti, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Uzbekistan, Yemen, or the airspace above any of these locations. Additionally, if you served in any of these locations on or after August 2, 1990, you have a VA presumption of exposure to burn pits or other toxins. Arabian Sea, Gulf of Aden, Gulf of Oman, neutral zone between Iraq and Saudi Arabia, Persian Gulf, or Red Sea. Remember, simply having a VA presumption of exposure does not satisfy a claim for service-connected disability. You must also have a current medical diagnosis of a medical condition that can be related to the toxin to which you were exposed. If you do not have current VA health care, you should apply for it. If you have been denied enrollment in VA health care because of the income means test, a VA toxin screening affirming that you were exposed should make you eligible for VA health care. Keep in mind that VA healthcare is the best way for any medical issues relative to your toxic exposures to be discovered early and thus enhance positive treatment results of the medical issue. The Department of Veterans Affairs recently released a warning about the growing overpayment scam and reminded veterans that the agency will never ask for login credentials or demand upfront payments to protect benefits. Better Business Bureau officials say fraudulent messages often look convincing, using realistic logos, official-sounding language, and urgent requests to pressure victims into acting quickly. According to the Federal Trade Commission, military consumers reported losing $684 million to fraud last year. Unfortunately, scammers can use publicly available military records and cross-reference them with enrollment or benefits information to make their scams appear more legitimate. The Better Business Bureau Scam Tracker website also indicates veterans reported a variety of scams, from fraudulent offers to increased disability payments to fake home loan-related schemes. Consumer advocates urge veterans to verify any communication directly through the official website of the Department of Veterans Affairs Office of the Inspector General. The VA, like most federal government agencies, require contact through its website. The phone number for the Veterans Affairs Office of the Inspector General is 800-488-8244, but the number was buried deep inside the website. The menu never discussed VA fraud. The line does not accept voicemail. The VAOIG office is only available from 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and the hours on Thursday and Friday are even shorter. Come on, government. Ignoring the older Americans can be corrected with just the availability of an easy-to-find telephone number. These are the people who made it possible for you, the younger generation, to enjoy the benefits of the new technology that now excludes them. I hope when you become elderly that you are afforded better treatment than you are providing for the current, older generation. And the quote of the day is from Abraham Lincoln. America will never be destroyed from the outside. If we falter and lose our freedoms, it will be because we destroyed ourselves. Next, we have State Bans Phones in School Classrooms by Jack O'Connor with the Chicago Tribune. After falling short last year, Illinois lawmakers gave final approval Sunday to a measure that would prohibit students from using cell phones throughout the day at most public and charter schools. The measure approved in the State House in April next heads to the desk of Governor J.B. Pritzker, who made the issue a top priority during the past two spring legislative sessions. The state Senate last year approved a less restrictive version without opposition, but it was never taken up in the House. Every parent and educator knows the damage that unchecked screen time and social media can do to our children and how disruptive they can be in school, Pritzker said in a statement Sunday shortly after the Senate vote. Beginning in the 27-28 school year, every public and charter school district without an existing phone policy will be required to institute a bell-to-bell ban for elementary and middle school students. High school students may use phones during lunch or breaks at each district's discretion. Districts may also permit phone use during emergencies or for educational purposes. Last year's version, which only required phones to be banned during class time, was met with some opposition in the House vote from lawmakers who raised concerns about the potential for unfair or uneven enforcement. Teachers are frustrated that they're having to police students over their phones. Students are distracted by their phones. All of the research I've seen shows this is going to help them focus and cut down on bullying and lead to a better school environment. Research on the effectiveness of phone bans varies. A study by the RAND Corp found that an urban Florida school district saw test scores and attendance improve within 2 years of implementing a ban. But an April report from the National Bureau of Economic Research found that phone bans had little to no effect on academic achievement, perceived bullying, or attendance. The proposed Illinois ban mandates districts adopt phone storage guidelines, but does not outline what those guidelines should look like. And that completes the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.